Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining us. We're just going to wait a little while to allow more people to join. Thank you for joining us today.
Great. I think the folks joining in has kind of leveled off, so I think we're good to go. So I would like to thank everyone for joining us today. I will be helping kind of start us off, and as well as introducing Aaron and Roberto. So my name is Leslie Ann Saintemore. I am an associate at Durant Barristers, and with us today we have Aaron Durant. Aaron is the founder of Durant Barristers. Aaron focuses on a wide variety of litigation matters, but most relevant to today, and I think a lot of folks here, is that Aaron was previously a competitive athlete and is an NCCP certified coach. She has a particular interest in sports disputes and administration, and in this capacity, she frequently assists national and provincial sports organizations, athletes, and coaches. We also have with us Roberto Gione, who is a senior associate at BLG. And Roberto is a privacy lawyer and litigator. He provides advice to clients on their obligations under various privacy laws, for example, responding to freedom of information requests, protecting personal information, complying with various privacy laws, as well as drafting and assisting with responding to privacy breaches. He also practices in the field of health law and assists clients with a wide variety of matters in that aspect. So today we'll be starting with some of the human rights aspects of vaccination policies and passports, and we'll be starting with Aaron for that. And then Roberto will jump in to talk about some of the privacy considerations. So as you know, as you probably see on your screen, we are recording today. And if anyone has any concerns about that, your best bet would be to leave the webinar and you can speak with us afterwards if you have concerns about having been recorded. We ask that all questions are directed into the Q&A, which you can find should be on the bottom of your screen on the right-hand side. And there you can pop questions into the Q&A that our speakers will address today. Lastly, we recognize this can be a controversial topic, but we ask that everybody work with us today to be polite, ask questions from a place of wanting to learn. And we do just want to let you know that if there are folks who are being disruptive to our ability to continue with the webinar, they will be removed from the webinar. And so with that, I'll let you get started, Aaron.
So the reason we decided to host this webinar today is I've been receiving a lot of questions through my sports clients, through my friends in sport, through social media, just about the vaccine mandate that recently came out in Ontario and similar mandates that are coming out across Canada. And I really decided that rather than giving people legal advice and charging people all kinds of money to have one-on-one discussions, that we wanted to put out as much information as possible in an affordable manner, especially recognizing that a lot of people that are having to administer vaccine mandates and vaccine policies are day-to-day volunteers who likely have never had to go through anything like this before and who are likely having a lot of trouble managing expectations with their membership. So that's why we decided to do this. We have people joining us here today from across Canada, which is great. Most of what we say today is based on Ontario legislation, but I can say that both in the context of human rights legislation and privacy legislation, there are very similar pieces of legislation across the province and across the country, and similar considerations apply. For people in Ontario, as you will know, there was recently a vaccine mandate put in place by the provincial government, which restricts people who are not vaccinated from participating in certain activities or attending at certain venues. If they do not have an exemption based on a ground that is outlined in the Human Rights Code, and I will get to that. What we are seeing in the sports context is that although it's the facility owners and operators who are mandated by law to ensure that the vaccine mandate is being applied properly, a lot of those facilities are actually downgrading that responsibility in their rental agreements to the individual renters. So, for example, in the context of a swim club, the municipality might be requiring the swim club itself to ensure that their members are not entering the premises unless vaccinated, rather than a municipal employee, you know, sitting at the door and doing the work themselves. And from my perspective, it's a little bit unfortunate that that's the case, because the municipalities and the universities that own the facilities do have typically more resources than the clubs who rent, but it is their prerogative to set the rules for who use their premises. And unfortunately for many of the people on this call, the responsibility is falling on you. So what I want to talk about first is the human rights considerations that apply to both vaccine mandates, which are placed by government provincial governments, and also vaccine policies, which organizations may decide to create that are in addition to what the government has imposed. So I'm going to address my part of the presentation in three parts. The first part is going to be an overview of the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedom, as this is something that is often raised in the discourse as being relevant. Vaccine mandates violate my rights. How come the government is able to do this? I'll talk about that a little bit. Part two, provincial human rights statutes, which is another layer of protection of human rights in Canada. And all of the provinces have some sort of provincial human rights regime, that the particulars differ, but most of what we're going to talk about today will apply through most common law provinces in Canada. So everywhere except Quebec. Quebec also has a regime, but there's slightly different legal parameters always apply in Quebec because of the civil law system. Part three is I'm going to talk a little bit about the duty to accommodate people who are not able to be vaccinated due to a protected ground under the human rights codes or human rights systems, and what that means for sports associations. And I'm going to be able to answer questions throughout this presentation. If you submit them through the Q&A, Leslie Ann will be the moderator of the questions. She may decide to interrupt me as I go, which is completely fine. Or she may decide to pepper me with questions at the end, if that makes more sense. So the big question that we're all dealing with is, you know, do vaccine mandates and policies that violate the charter? And in this case, I've narrowed it down to in the case of amateur sport and participation in sport. So as most of you know, that Canada has a charter of rights and freedoms. It's part of our constitution. There are certain rights that are written into the charter. The rights that are written into the Charter of Rights and Freedoms can also be limited by the state under Section 1 of the Charter, basically if the government can show that limiting that right is reasonable in the circumstance. The human right, charter right, that's most frequently cited by some people writing about vaccines is Section 7, which is the right to life, liberty, and security of the person. So there are cases out there where it has been considered about whether or not the government can force people to do certain things that impact their person. So if the Canadian government, for example, were to make a law that everybody must get vaccinated, you know, basically the government shooting yourself up with a needle and you had no choice about whether or not to participate, Section 7 would absolutely apply in that situation. There could still be an argument about whether or not that action is reasonable under Section 1, that the government would have to to argue. But you know, you have a right in Canada to limit, you know, your medical treatment, limit what goes into your body. So, you know, actions like that would be questionable under our constitution. And fortunately in Canada, those aren't the actions that the governments are taking either federally or provincially. What the governments have done under consultation with their internal legal teams are limiting people's abilities to participate in certain activities, limiting people's abilities to enter certain places that are optional places and optional activities, unless people are vaccinated. So it's different than forced vaccination. It's not forced vaccination. As I tell my clients, there's no right in Canada to participate in sport. Participation in sport is not a protected right. Participation in organized sport, provincial competitions, things of that nature are not in and of itself a right. It's something that people like to do, people wish to do, people might feel it's very important for their own personal identity or fitness, but it's not a protected right that that is being taken away by not allowing people, by having vaccine mandates or vaccine passport programs in place. The vast majority of legal experts agree with this position, and there's been no cases in Canada during the course of the pandemic that has found otherwise. I will say that recently in the news, there's been reports, especially in British Columbia, of a very large number of complaints being started and enrolling in, not in the sport context, but in the mandatory vaccination context generally, questioning whether or not, you know, rights are being violated. And generally, those folks have not been successful to date. So that's the Canadian Charter of Rights. Another thing to keep in mind when you're discussing these issues and thinking about the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms is the charter applies to government action. So actions done by the provincial government, actions done by the federal government, sports organizations themselves are not governed by the charter. Sports organizations are typically going to be governed by the provincial laws and provincial regulations that apply. So what about sports associations that are thinking about making their own vaccination policies and their own practices that might be in addition to what the provincial government provides? So we have had some sports organizations in Ontario who are finding it difficult to administer the government regulation that says that essentially people under the age of 18 are exempt from the mandatory vaccination requirement for sport when people 12 and up are able to get vaccinated. And some of them are deciding that it just makes the most sense for them to have the rule for their sport be, you know, everybody 12 and up is required to be vaccinated unless there's a appropriate exemption under human rights legislation. Some of the sports organizations are also considering making vaccination a mandatory requirement for their employees, their volunteers, and anyone who is associated with their activity, whether indoor or outdoor. And we've been being asked a lot of questions about that and helping put together applicable policies. The one thing I'll say about that is that it is possible to create these policies as long as you're mindful of some of the human rights considerations we're going to talk about today and the privacy issues that Roberto is going to go over as well. But you have to keep in mind that there are some differences between volunteers and your participants versus any paid employees that you may have. So with volunteers and participants, sports associations have quite a bit of flexibility about what they are able to do. You're likely already familiar with many, many, many policies that your sport association already has in place. So adding on a new policy that you require members to follow as a condition of their participation is entirely possible. And it happens frequently for sports associations to roll those out and to amend them from time to time. It's a relatively easy thing for sports associations to do for their volunteers, for their athletes, for their participants. Making vaccine policies for paid employees is a bit more difficult a job to do, because employees have certain rights under all provincial legislations. They have employment contracts. There are employment laws that apply. And if you were to go and make a change to the employment situation during the course of the employment, there are certain rights that could be triggered. The most important right to keep in mind, or the most important legal remedy to keep in mind, is for people who refuse to be vaccinated, even if there's a policy put in place by the employer, it might lead to a termination in the employment relationship if they can't come to an agreement, you know, if it's not possible to work from home, for example. You know, I have one situation where the person who didn't want to be vaccinated was an on-site employee who was responsible for catering for the entire business. And catering isn't something you can do remotely. Catering is something that, you know, puts you into contact with people in the building. So a decision was made that it just wasn't feasible to keep that person, and a termination had to occur. The interesting thing with terminations of employment, and where we're still a little bit up in the air until we start getting some decisions, is whether or not the termination would be for cause, which means the employer would not have to pay the individual anything, or whether the termination would be without cause, which means they'd be entitled to a termination package based on how long they were employed, and so on and so forth. Where the human rights code and human rights legislation comes in is when individuals might have the ability to say, I'm not getting vaccinated for a reason that's protected by the code, and therefore the organization has the duty to accommodate me up to a point of undue hardship. And that's where I'll go to next. So provincial human rights legislation doesn't prevent discrimination generally. It prevents discrimination on certain protected grounds. So for example, you know, if I don't like the way somebody wears red, you know, and they don't want to hang around people that wear red, and, you know, and I decide, okay, none of my friends are going to be allowed to wear red, you know, the decision to wear red or not is not a protected ground in the code. It would make me a really stupid and silly person to not have any friends that wear red, but that wouldn't be a discriminatory activity. The grounds that are protected under the provincial human rights codes differ from province to province. The one ground that is found in every province is that you're not allowed to discriminate on somebody based on a disability, and disability includes a medical condition. And discrimination can both be outright discrimination or discrimination that occurs just based on your rules or regulations that apply. So if there's people who are not able to be vaccinated because of a medical condition, because of a heart condition, because of other underlying medical grounds supported by a doctor, they would be exempt from mandatory vaccination requirements, both set in place by the provincial government, and they should be exempted from the vaccination requirements that your individual association might make up. And you need to have in place some measures up to a point of undue hardship to be able to accommodate those individuals. So I'll go back to the example of a swim club. If you have a swimmer who has a medical note that they're not able to be vaccinated due to a medical condition, and they want to participate in your lane swim or in a meet that you're organizing, you would want to look at your individual circumstances, your individual club, and think, you know, is there a way that I can allow this person to participate up to a point of undue hardship? And undue hardship is typically, you know, the expense is going to be too great. There's no way to protect the other people from the exposure or to take protective measures. So if you were a swim club and somebody wasn't able to participate, to get vaccinated, they wanted to participate, some of the things that you might consider is, okay, we might be able to have additional distance between this athlete and other athletes, you know, in terms of having lanes spread further apart. We might be able to grant access to the race itself in the pool, but we might decide to restrict access to certain facilities, such as the change rooms and the showers, where people are congregated in smaller areas where there may not be ventilation. You might increase the mask usage, for example, to make sure everyone feels safe. So those are some things you can consider from an accommodation perspective. If you have an employee, for example, who is an administrator for your club, and if that person is not able to be vaccinated due to a medical condition, you might easily be able to accommodate that person by allowing them to continue to work from home, especially if they've been working from home the entire pandemic. So there's ways you can accommodate people who want to participate, and you're required by law to consider those accommodations rather than just saying outright, no, you're not vaccinated, we don't want you. Now, the caveat to all this is that the human rights codes only protect protected grounds. So disability, for example, religion is another example. The human rights codes in each province do not have protections for people who just don't want to do something. Who have a certain idea about something. So the Ontario Human Rights Commission recently put out a statement on that. And, you know, just because somebody doesn't want to get vaccinated and doesn't like the idea of getting vaccinated or doesn't believe the evidence behind the vaccination, that alone is not a reason that they could get exempt from a mandatory vaccination policy. It's not a protective ground under the code. And this is the Ontario Human Rights Commission's statement, which came out just that last week, which was timely. So it takes the position that mandating and requiring proof of vaccinations to protect people at work or when receiving services, which would include access to sport, is generally permissible under the Human Rights Code, as long as protections are put in place to make sure that people who are unable to be vaccinated for code-related reasons, such as disability, are reasonably accommodated, and that this applies to all organizations. Upholding individual rights while trying to collectively protect the general public has been a challenge throughout the pandemic, and organizations must attempt to balance the rights of people who have not been vaccinated due to code protective grounds such as disability, while ensuring individual and collective rights to health and safety. So this is an important statement, and it's something that lawyers have been waiting to have come out, because the Ontario Human Rights Commission is essentially the body who has a tribunal in place that will be the one reviewing human rights complaints and making decisions about whether human rights violations have happened. And the British Columbia equivalent is the body who has already starting to get a great deal of complaints related to COVID-19 vaccine policies and mandates, and is becoming a bit overwhelmed with that. And they have sort of come up with a statement almost encouraging people not to submit further complaints, because even though the complaints are being made, they're being dismissed and disposed of relatively quickly. So if you're an association who is having to manage the day-to-day expectations of your athletes, of your members, of your coaches, and you're getting a lot of concerns about whether or not your policy violates human rights, looking up this policy statement would be a good place for you to start in terms of sharing information. And after the presentation today, I will send a link to it to all of the participants, just so you have it handy for when you're answering those questions yourself. One last note on the duty to accommodate before I give up my airtime to Roberto to talk about privacy matters. So as I said, some people will not be able to get the COVID-19 vaccine for medical or disability related reasons. you are required to attempt to accommodate these people up to a point of undue hardship. And I can't stress that enough, because I don't want any of you going back to your organizations and running up policies that simply say, you know, if you're not vaccinated, you cannot participate. Such a policy would not be upheld. And you really need to make sure there's a carve out and that you're considering how you're going to be able to accommodate people that are not going to be able to be, that are not able to be vaccinated for whatever reason. And I can't sit here today and tell you exactly what that might look like in your situation, because it's going to depend, you know, on the sport, on your facilities, on your membership. You know, if you're running a sporting event, for example, for people that have health conditions. So let's say you're running activities with a retirement home or with a hospital or with developmentally delayed individuals who might be more at risk to also get physical ailments. You know, your ability to accommodate unvaccinated individuals might be different than if you're running a program with young, healthy adults, or if you're running a national team program with Olympians who are extremely healthy. So I think it's a very individual exercise when you're thinking about, okay, what can we do to accommodate individuals? What's possible? What's not possible? And there may well be situations where you decide that it's not possible up to a point and there would be undue hardship either on the organization itself or on the other participants. But you really need to go through the thought process and document the thought process and be able to explain it in the event that your thought process is challenged down the road. The last bit on accommodation, and this is what leads into Roberto's presentation, is proof of the requirements for accommodation. So most organizations and employers are requesting some sort of proof, typically a medical note to document the requirement to not be vaccinated. So you're able to request medical notes. Roberto might talk a little bit about best practice in terms of how that would be done. If the medical note is ambiguous or there's concerns about the veracity of it and whether it's a, you know, an actual medical doctor or whether the doctor has seen this person, you're able to ask follow-up questions and write follow-up letters to the medical professionals for additional information up to a certain point. And if someone is not willing to provide you with evidence that they are exempt under the code and required to be accommodated, it's my view that you don't have to do so unless you have some evidence in hand. So with that,
Erin, before we hand things over to Roberto, a couple of questions have come in. Did you want to finish off on this slide first, or can I pepper you with some questions now?
Go ahead.
So one of the questions that came in, because you were talking about doctor's notes, and I will mention for folks in Ontario, within the regulation itself, it does specify who you are required to accept a note from and who you are not, generally a doctor, a registered nurse. But there are specifications within the regulations here. But how do you document or demonstrate a religious exemption? So if somebody comes to you with that, what kind of documentation should folks be looking for?
Are doing different things. A lot of larger employers have implemented a practice of either asking for a note from their religious leader, or an evidence of the religious doctrine that applies. So, you know, if there's a religious text that has a section that specifically applies, you know, a copy of the text and an explanation of the text. Religious exemptions have been an interesting one, because most of the mainstream, if you will, religions have come out with statements that they're not against vaccinations, but religious exemptions are probably the more complicated one to address. And Roberto may have thoughts on this this as well, but the two that I've seen are you know, the letter from a religious leader or a copy of the applicable religious doctrine.
Thanks. And another question that came in that I think might go back a little bit more to accommodations, but also maybe a little bit of a consideration for deciding if your organization requires a policy or what you want that policy to look like, is, are there differences between indoor and outdoor sports? I know here in Ontario, the majority of the government prescribed rules apply to indoor spaces. Do you have thoughts on this? I know, you know, for example, some outdoor sports may have events that are indoor. So where these things can still apply. What are your thoughts, Erin?
So in Ontario, the government has decided that, you know, most of the science seems to suggest that transmission is more likely to occur in indoor closed environments. And in particular, you know, hockey rinks and curling rinks seem to be perfect breeding grounds, as the virus just seems to float around at head level for some reason. So the focus from at least in Ontario government has been indoor facilities. You know, for outdoor sports, it really has been a case by case situation in terms of what the sports are doing. So for example, sports where you're always separated tend to be treated a bit more openly in terms of vaccination requirements and may not decide to have them because the actual likelihood of close contact might be low during the sport itself. Whereas, so, you know, tennis comes to mind, although I haven't followed if they have mandatory rules for that, for their sport, but pickleball is another one where people tend to be pretty spread out and is a popular sport. But, you know, there's other outdoor sports where contact is quite frequent. So, you know, soccer, for example, there can be relatively close contact between participants. Rugby, Aussie rules football, which I know is Leslie Ann's sport. So it's really a case by case situation. And what the provincial and national sports associations have been doing is working with lawyers, working with doctors, looking at what their risk for transmission is within their sport and doing what they feel is right in terms of protecting their members from exposure. And, you know, a lot of the transmission that has been documented among sports hasn't actually been at the sport itself, but has been at sort of the social events that follow the sport, particularly with adult sport. So, you know, sometimes even if the sport itself might not be, you know, that close contact, such as baseball or softball, if there's been a lot of transmission within the sport at the social events that follow, you know, the sport association might just decide that, okay, like there is risk, there is transmission, you know, we're going to have a vaccine policy in place to protect our members. And that's really within their prerogative to do so. You know, given that sport is an optional activity and that people aren't required to go to it. So that would sort of be my response to that. And leading into that is just, you know, what does all this mean in practice? So first, you know, if you're a sports organization, you're definitely required to follow what the provincial government has set out in terms of vaccine mandates, if there are any that apply in your province. You may be asked to make accommodations to those provincial vaccine mandates, and all of the provincial vaccine mandates built in a system where people can be accommodated. So you need to start thinking about what accommodation might look like in your sport and within your activity. You're able to collect evidence of accommodation, and some of the provinces like Ontario are also require you to verify vaccination status. So you're going to have to think about mechanically, how are you going to do that? And how are your members going to get you that information? And more importantly, you know, what are you going to do with that information? And how are you going to protect that information once you have it? And I guess the last thing I'll say is this is hard. Like, this stuff is not easy. And again, I'm a bit personally frustrated that municipalities and universities are downgrading a lot of this on volunteer sports associations in terms of being the ones to verify the information, you know, implement the vaccine mandates rather than them doing it, since they have all kinds of money. But, you know, if you're having difficulty with any of this, don't, you know, feel free to reach out to a lawyer who, you know, might be involved in your club. There are some legal resources that are available to not-for-profit organizations for free for simple questions that I can provide a link to when I send around the resources after the presentation. So don't be afraid to reach out, because this isn't easy, and the government isn't necessarily giving sports associations all the resources that they need to have these questions answered. So, you know, don't feel the need to struggle alone. So with that, I'm gonna stop sharing my slide and throw things over to Roberto.
Hello, everyone. And thank you for being here. I'm gonna put my slides up, hopefully without booting myself out of this presentation. All right, looks good so far. And so what we're gonna talk about now, and having heard sort of everything about the human rights and the accommodations, is sort of a review on privacy and what that actually means in terms of a vaccine policy, a vaccine passport, and implementing government regulations. We'll start with an overview of, I guess, privacy law in general, and then work towards looking at the actual vaccine passport legislation in Ontario as an example, and practical tips then for actually putting this into place. So privacy law and legislation is, one could say, a patchwork quilt. It's different across Canada, it's different depending on which province you're in. It's different, especially in Ontario, depending on what type of organization that you are. And there's a variety of different laws that apply to certain sectors and not others. For example, you'll see here sort of the kind of history of legislation in Canada, where we have some acts that apply only to federal institutions and federally regulated businesses such as banks. And then we have provincial legislation that applies to municipalities and hospitals and government agencies and the Ontario government with the sort of freedom of information. And then we have a number of private sector laws, which are through uneven application across Canada. So we have the federal private sector personal information and protection of electronic documents act, which is quite a mouthful to try and actually say. And that one applies to organizations engaged in commercial activity, which doesn't necessarily, in most cases, doesn't apply to not-for-profit or volunteer type organizations. Other than where they may be engaging in a commercial activity, such as putting on a tournament, a competition, or other things with an expectation of profit. So, and then you have other provincial privacy obligations, which are somewhat broader than the federal one, such as in British Columbia, in Alberta, and in Quebec, where the provincial privacy legislation replaces the federal one. And you have as well a separate category of information, which is tends to be treated separately, which is personal health information. And Ontario has its own act on personal health information, as do a lot of other provinces. And so we've got a lot of different acts and legislation, but we're going to set those aside now, because ultimately the principles that will apply to sport organizations and to vaccine passports and vaccine policies, we're going to be consistent across legislation and across circumstances where legislation doesn't apply to you directly either. So before we get to that, I just want to briefly touch on what is privacy. What does that mean? And in the context of an individual, it means information about you, information about things that are central to your identity and central to your sort of biographical core, as the Supreme Court sort of used that term, which doesn't mean anything really on its own. And this has been sort of adopted somewhat into privacy laws. And it's sort of the right to have some control over the use of your information right? To know who's using it, why it's being used for, and how it's going to be collected, stored, and saved. And the privacy laws and sort of the common law recognize that in the world, you need to share personal information to obtain services. There's a lot of things that you can't do or can't get or can't receive unless you share personal information. For example, healthcare is one of those examples without sharing any information about the state of your health, it's going to be difficult for a healthcare provider to assist you. Or when we want to purchase goods, and especially now with the pandemic, from online retailers and have it delivered to our house, we have to deliver a whole bunch of information, our names, our addresses, payment information, and other such details. And the context of the privacy laws is making sure that you at least know what you're getting into, why you're getting into it, and how it's going to be used. And privacy is not an absolute right in that it's relative to what you're using it for. So relative to what your personal information is going to be used for and relative to what you want to share. But essentially the guiding principles, and these are sort of we'll keep in mind as we go through, are for things like in amateur sport and sport in general or other recreational activities, things that you don't have to do in order to be sort of, they're optional rather than mandatory. They're not getting medical care. They're not going to a grocery store to buy food. So you're in a different category and you're in the category where consent matters, where you have a choice to give or not give personal information. And it also matters what personal information is reasonably necessary for the activity. And so those are the main principles to sort of keep in mind, especially in the recreational and non-necessary activities of life. And under privacy laws and the key principles, there's in terms of where privacy laws in Canada come from, there's the Canadian Standards Association a long time ago had put together sort of a list of 10 privacy principles. And you'll find these if you ever have to look up legislation, hopefully you don't. But if you ever had to go and look it up, you would find these are sort of the basis of privacy law in Canada and all the major sort of legislation that comes out generally follows these principles. And these, the sort of principles you see on screen are the key ones in terms of what you need to know in terms of managing a vaccine policy or a vaccine passport. The first one and sort of one of the significant ones is consent. So consent in this case means identifying for your members, for your participants, your spectators, what information you need, why you need it, and giving them those members an option to provide it. So consent means you can always ask a question. The individual doesn't have to answer, but there are obviously consequences for not answering. So if you want to buy something, but you refuse to provide payment information, you won't get to buy it. You want to sort of go on a trip and other countries require passport information, you can choose not to provide it, but they may not let you in. And so consent means, and under privacy law, you can always ask a question, but there's no requirement for the person to answer your question. Of course, there's consequences for answering or not answering, and we'll get to those afterwards. The next principle is to limit collection. So if you're covered under sort of federal privacy law or provincial privacy law, for commercial activities, the idea is only collect the information you actually need to provide the good or service that is necessary. So if you're buying a TV, it's inappropriate for a business to be asking you sort of where you were born or what sort of, when's the last time you went to the hospital or other such, these are obviously ridiculous examples, but that kind of things that aren't related to what service or good that you're buying. And the other part of that principle is the less information that you have, and if you keep it to the only information that you need, the better off you'll be as an organization in terms of protecting information and avoiding what is now a very common risk of ransomware, privacy breaches, cyber attacks, et cetera. And this counterpart or the second part to limiting collection is also to limit your use of it. So limit the use of the information you collect within your organization to those that need to know it. So the times when now that we have electronic files, you wouldn't want everyone to have access to the entire HR database, or everyone have access to every team list if they don't need to have access for it, and to limit who you disclose it to and how long you retain things for. So to keep information only as long as you absolutely need to keep it for. And when information is no longer necessary and no longer of benefit to you or the participant, to jettison it and delete it securely so that you don't have this sort of lingering risk. There are, of course, a lot of reasons to keep personal information for a long time, and that's not to say that you should delete information that you need to have. But the principle is to try and keep only what you need and use only what you need. And the last one is safeguards. And this is making sure that any information that you do collect is kept safe and secured and not available to those who don't need it, especially outside organizations. And in the case of vaccine passports or vaccine policies, where you're collecting or wanting to obtain information or proof of vaccination, there's a lot of sensitive information that can come on that proof of vaccination form on identification that are often the two pieces needed. And as everyone may have seen in sort of the recent story with the app in use in Alberta, the private app where CBC was able to basically access their database and pull down people's driver's license, Nexus cards, health information. And so part of it is making sure if you are storing things electronically, that it's not widely available. But the other part is if you've limited what you need to collect, the risk is lower as well. And so now moving on to, I guess, to the sort of core of our topic, which is policies and passports. And with everything, everything privacy related, and same with sort of human rights, there's a balancing of interests. And in this case, there's a right to privacy, but there's also a balance, which is the public health guidance, guidelines, and information. And so in this case, we know the public health guidance and all the sort of science that is being put out as the rules to follow talk about the importance of vaccines in limiting the spread of COVID. And there's also a lot of medical information about the dangers that come with COVID itself. And so what you have is an important sort of public health issue that as an organization, when you're hosting or arranging or putting on amateur sport, you're required to keep that as an occupier and as the organizer of it. And as part of that, because as we've been talking, it's not essential that someone goes to play sport. It's beneficial, it's great, but no one has to do it in order to live their life. And so you have a lot more weight put on to the importance of public health and keeping people safe. And there are already a lot of rules for keeping people safe within playing sports. You mandate the type of equipment that people use, mandate the type of rules that people follow, mandate, you know, the amount of practices, the amount of drills, the types of things that you can do, all in the interest of competition and sport and keeping people safe. And so there's already a lot of grounds or basis for putting in things that are meant to keep people safe. And in this case, when it comes to information about whether or not someone is vaccinated, you're collecting it directly from that individual. And you're not going around and sort of obtaining it indirectly from any other database. And so it becomes a personal choice for that individual to register with your program or not. And it can be one, as Aaron mentioned, a long list of policies that you already have that restrict who can do what and who can participate on things. You know, for volunteers, you already have a vulnerable sector check if anyone's gonna be involved with youth and other types of policies that require the collection of personal information and have a purpose behind them. And so that's the sort of things to consider in terms of where, how to put it in place in addition to the human rights is what do we need to do and what do we need to do to make sure that this is collected and that we can identify this. And we'll talk about the tips for limiting collection and what to do and how to perhaps practically go about collecting vaccination information. But first, I want to talk about briefly what the vaccine passport requirements are. And so these vaccine passport requirements in Ontario are put under an act called Reopening Ontario, Flexible Response to COVID. It's essentially a roadmap put together where the government can issue orders as dictated by the public health situation. And what they've done is they've put in a general obligation that the business organization that sort of that is operating has to follow, you know, all applicable laws, occupational health and safety, and other regulations made under it. So, and the use of business organization means not just sort of the owner of a premises, but it can be much broader than that. And they've recently added this additional sort of regulatory requirement, which is that, you know, when you're operating your organization or your business, you are to follow the recommendations and instructions by the chief medical officer or the local medical officer of health. And there are also directives that have been put in place. And this is where the authority for putting in sort of a vaccine passport and a vaccine sort of policy come in too. And they require you to establish one. They don't, in this case, the context, the content's not dictated by it as it is for long-term care homes or health organizations. And it just requires a policy to exist. And in terms of the vaccine passport, which has, which is also in this act, has a schedule of places where you need to show proof of vaccination in order to go in. And the proof of vaccination that needs to be shown is a copy of a of identity to identify that the piece of paper that shows that you are fully vaccinated is shown. And there are a few exemptions that I want to talk about. And the first is for youth sport. Essentially, there's a broad exemption for it for indoor places where it applies. And this is only for youth that are actually participating in the activity. So a member of a team rather than a spectator or some other person who is sort of observing or otherwise. So it has to be actually a participant. And there will be other rules to follow, but that is one exemption in the legislation that that individual doesn't have to be show proof of vaccination in order to enter the building. Anybody accompanying them would, but that there's an actual exemption for that. And the other one is for a medical exemption. And this is the only other exemption that's provided for in the legislation. And it's up from a nurse, a physician, or a nurse practitioner. And so it's limited to those types of specialties. And in this case, unlike sort of other situations, there's actually an ability to ask for the and look at the actual medical certificate for the accommodation. This is sort of different from masks, where you don't necessarily get to ask for a note about it, versus in vaccination, it's made clear in the legislation that this is information that someone is required to provide to you. And with these things, it's important to minimize collection. And so talking about the vaccine passport, which is the requirement to sort of check people coming into the premises or coming into the sporting event that's covered by the act, you're not allowed, you're not supposed to collect the actual information. So in those cases, what you need to have and what the sort of legislation is sort of thinking of is essentially a screen at the door. So it doesn't have to be exactly at the door. It can be, you know, if you're part of a larger facility, it can be at the area that's right before the locker rooms, right before you sort of enter the spot where you as the organization have control over that space, rather than have someone at the door to a multi sort of use facility, rather than you would concentrate on your own sort of participants as depending on where, how the obligation has been downloaded to you or not. And what you would do, and the best way sort of is, you know, have an individual or volunteer, have someone make sure to sort of, you know, keep track of, you know, everyone who shows you something has to show you when they pass you. And once they pass you, you're in an area, you're within you don't have to keep anything else. And so it's a visual check at that point, and it's sort of a good faith standard of everyone's doing their best. You may over time someone may forget or something like that, but it's not one of these where there's kind of a locked door system that I think is expected. It's one where the best thing is just to have someone look and then you move on, and that way that you're not retaining any information and you're not collecting any information from any individual, and you're only verifying it. In terms of how to put this in place, the key, I think, for an organization, if questions are asked later about did you do it, is to basically just put down a short written procedure of how this will occur and have a sort of a training policy or procedure for your volunteers to say, here's what you do. You have to look at an ID, and it has to be, specify the kind of ID that is there. And then here's the type of document, and the Ministry of Health has guidance on, here's the document, what it looks like. Here's where you need to look at, and here's the types of vaccinations that are considered approved. And you put that in place, and everyone who goes past point A or point B has to show it. In that case, you're fulfilling the requirements without actually collecting any personal information to keep in store or have to safeguard. And so the best way to do that is just to put it, practically on the ground, set it up so that, you can draw a line about where people need to cross to be part of your organization, and then you're in. When it comes to a vaccine policy that you may want to implement, you also want to limit collection. In that case, you probably want to do it by having a volunteer or an individual, depending on where you are or how you're set up, but have a trusted individual visually verify these things and then kind of create a document that says meets the requirements or is appropriate to sort of participate or is cleared to participate, so that you have a centralized list of who is vaccinated, if that's your policy, without actually keeping their vaccine certificate. You don't want to collect their health number. You don't want to collect all this other information that you don't need. And it's just setting up a system where you have a trusted individual, and most of these, because we're dealing with sport, you will interact in person with your participants. And so just setting it up so that it's done once and that can be followed through that participant, if they sign up for multiple sessions or multiple events. And the other part is to communicate clearly to all participants that depending where you are going, you may need to actually have them bring proof of vaccination. Because wherever, different facilities, different tournaments, different places may require it. So even though you as an organization are only showing it once, you'll need to have that known to your group. And there may be differences depending on which tournament you go to, where the organizers may require you to show something or attest something. And then that can be an option that's given to your organization about whether to participate in that, whether you're satisfied with the safeguards they've put in place. And because this is sort of essentially it's a voluntary or contractual relationship. When you're going to a tournament, you're entering into a contract. And you can require all sorts of things in contracts, including mandatory vaccination. Same with the registration that you do with your own individuals. And so basically it's put something in place that's easy, simple, and collects limited information. And that'll be the best way to avoid if there is any kind of cyber attack or cyber breach or anything, which any organization from the largest to the smallest are vulnerable to. You don't have any real personal information going out. And you also want to avoid, of course, with everything, emailing information without actually either putting a password on it or using a secure system. That is one of the most common sources of privacy breaches within organizations, including healthcare organizations and others. And then lastly, in terms of managing conflict, and one of the key things with the personal information and with everything is provide advance notice and reminders. Make sure everyone knows exactly what they need to do, why they need to do it, and how they need to do things. You already have existing policies on conflict and harassment, and rely on those. This is simply an extension of those things where the interactions between people need to be civil, and you already have that. The other is to have patience. People will forget things. People will have different sort of issues. So if everyone's patient and sort of, it'll go a lot smoother. And where you are the occupier of a premises, you know, you have rights to sort of remove people or to bar people entry. And for the vaccine passport, you will actually have to prevent people from coming in. So it's making sure that, you know, if someone refuses to listen and come in, then you can say that they have to leave. And then if not, you can call the police. Or if there's, depending where you are, there might be security that may be able to assist. But it's not to sort of get into a confrontation with someone, but use your rights that are available to you under, you know, the acts to be able to call for help and assistance on those things.
Let's add one point on that. Most provincial and national sports associations also have codes of conduct that apply to their members, which covers things like how you should interact with others, interact with volunteers. And, you know, it's possible, you know, if that activity doesn't go so far as being criminal, that there may be a complaint process and a discipline process built into the sports system that might be able to deal with people that might be abusive or harassing of your volunteers who are trying to implement these policies. So keep that in mind as well.
Okay, so I think that takes us to the end of my presentation. I'm going to stop sharing and see if there's any questions to answer.
Thanks, Roberto. So we have had a few questions come in. I think the first one I'll start with is, so you mentioned how folks can, you know, view the vaccine, proof of vaccine once, create a list. And if folks are doing that and they check the list once, sorry, let me rephrase this. They check the proof of vaccine once and they know somebody is on the list. They don't have to be continuing to check the proof of vaccine every time that person attends at the facilities, correct?
Well, the law under the sort of the Ontario one in the facility will probably require you to actually do that each time. Okay. And so I think you would want to be, because you'll need to have a screening at the door and you'll want to have that in place. For other things, you won't necessarily need to, but I think the facilities that you rent from will require you to have that in place, because the law doesn't really say if you know you don't have to check. It kind of is you must check and show each time, unfortunately, is the way it's sort of set up right now.
Perfect.
And what we're seeing in practice is facilities implementing this in different ways. I'd say most facilities are doing kind of the door check or requiring a door check, and you'll need to work with your facilities to do what they're requiring you to do as a condition of entry. You know, for outdoor sports or facilities that aren't requiring a door check due to some sort of exemption, you know, especially if it's outdoors, it's a typical one. You know, that's where sort of the one-time list could potentially be used in terms of, you know, checking in on it. And, you know, once you know a member's on it, then you wouldn't have to do it every time. You know, it doesn't really make sense, but it's really going to be in discretion in many instances of the person who owns and operates the facilities. And really, you know, you're just going to be asked to help them administer that and kind of, you know, in many ways, we have to do what we're told. So, you know, ideally, the facility itself would be having the people at the door doing the check. You know, if they're asking you as the renter to administer the check with one of your volunteers, you know, you can try to push back and say that's restrictive for us. We don't have enough people. But in a lot of cases, it is being downloaded on the sport. And, you know, you'll have to arrange to have, you know, a parent or another adult kind of trained in how to do the check and to do it on behalf of your club each time.
Thank you for that. And so, as was emphasized, when collecting this personal information, it's really important that, you know, if a club has a vaccine policy and they're collecting this information for their own purposes to implement that policy, that it's a trusted individual who is collecting that information and collecting the information being, you know, not wanting to keep copies and things like that, but noting down who is vaccinated. Can that information be shared within the organization with other folks? What kind of consent is required for it to be shared if, for example, you know, if parents have concern about their children interacting with other folks, can that information be shared? How should we be answering those kinds of questions, Roberto?
So I think the starting point is before sort of putting in a vaccine sort of policy for you, you have to think about, okay, why do we want this information? Who will need this information? And what purposes are we going to use it for? And kind of identify all of those in advance so that when you ask for that type of information from your members or individuals, you can tell them, here's what we're going to do with it. We're going to collect it, we're going to keep it here, and we're going to use it for the following purposes or share it with the following people or other organizations, depending on the context of your league or sort of interrelationships that you may have with facilities or others. So it's kind of doing the pre-work of figuring out what do you know, what do you need to do. Now, of course, that won't ever be complete because regulations and everything is changing. So where you have a new purpose or a new disclosure, what's going to be important is going to seek consent again from the individuals in order to use that information. So where you go to a new place and you need new information or new sharing, it's kind of getting the consent of individuals to share. And if that's a condition of attending, they can share and attend, or they can say no and be prevented from doing so.
Perfect. Thank you. And then, Aaron, we've had a couple questions that are a little bit more human rights focused. And I do know, folks, we're running a little bit over time, but I do want to try to get all these questions answered for folks. So the Ontario legislation only specifies rules for medical exemption. But under the Human Rights Code, there are other things that need to be accommodated. So what are your thoughts on how to navigate the fact that there is the regs only the exemption for medical, but it's possible there may be other exemptions, for example, religion or creed?
Yeah, a good question, and something that lawyers have been discussing amongst ourselves. And there is conflicting opinion on this within lawyers that even practice in this area. Some lawyers are interpreting the legislation to mean that the only exemption they'll accept is disability. Other lawyers, including myself, have a more cautious view of it and feel that the regulation doesn't expressly exempt the Ontario Human Rights Code or overthrow the Human Rights Code or supersede it in any way. So I'm personally of the view that you have to accommodate all of the possible exemptions that are found in the Human Rights Code, which would include religion or creed. Included in the Ontario Human Rights Commission's statement has been a clarification on what they would consider religion or creed to include. And, you know, simply a personal held belief with other individuals with the same belief that, you know, is against vaccination in and of itself isn't a creed. But, you know, if there were legitimate religious exemptions put forward, I think you have to consider them. I'm not sure if Roberto has views on this as well and whether he's thought about it. I'd be interested to know because we haven't discussed this before.
No, I mean, it's interesting because the vaccine passport really is designed as sort of a public health measure. And so it leads to an interesting issue of just aside from the human rights side, what sort of insurance requirements and other types of requirements you'll have with it. So it's a difficult question of what, in terms of the vaccine passport, what that's actually meant to do versus a vaccine policy where it's a bit of a, you know, easier answer, but the vaccine passport system makes it a bit more difficult for that specific purpose.
Thanks for that. And so I had a couple of folks looking for clarification on a couple of points that I know you've already touched on. And so one of the big ones is that because these mandates coming from the government are looking at requiring the vaccine in certain circumstances. They aren't forcing anyone to get the vaccine. Can organizations be seen as coercing folks to get the vaccine? Is there a risk of liability there? My gut instinct is no, because again, no one has a right to participate in sport. Aaron and Roberto, do you have anything to add to that clarification?
So I don't think you're putting your organization at any risk. So for example, if somebody were to get vaccinated and unfortunately had an adverse health reaction to the vaccine, you know, I don't think you have any real likelihood of being successfully sued as an example of that. And there's a few reasons why I say that. The first one is that in Ontario, there are, you know, there's legislation put in place now that protects, you know, people involving, you know, COVID lawsuits. But, you know, your defense would essentially be that, you know, you were following the advice of the government of Canada, you were following the laws of the government of Canada, you were following, you know, the medical information available to you. And you're not the one who's going to be responsible if, you know, God forbid any of that information ended up being wrong, or if the individual's circumstance was such that they probably shouldn't have been vaccinated. So I don't think, I personally don't think you need to worry about that being a liability risk. Roberto, anything to add?
Yeah, I don't think you have to worry about it being sort of a liability risk. You may get complaints and you may need to sort of work through and have some difficult conversations, but it's not sort of a real liability because you don't need to have, no need to participate in sport, and it's not a prohibited ground that you're preventing someone from participating in. You're not saying only people sort of a certain skin color or a certain religion or other things where are clearly reliable if you do that or anything even close to that. This is a different sort of issue and is more of the types of requirements that you have that are there to protect others rather than focus on an individual.
I'll add just from a liability perspective with all of this is it might be useful for you to take a look at your insurance policy for your association to see the extent of your coverages. And most not-for-profit associations now have coverage for claims, including human rights claims, which would either pay for a lawyer in the event your organization was sued by someone unhappy with these policies. And in some instances, they even pay for the payout. So, you know, now might be a good time to just take a look at the insurance coverage you have under your CGL or commercial general liability policy, you know, just to make sure that you do have all the proper coverages and in the event that there is litigation, you know, some help to help fund it. And as I said, it's quite common, particularly for national and provincial associations to have some coverage in place. And, you know, I'm hopeful that there won't be litigation in the sports context involving potential human rights violations, you know, but if there are, there will hopefully be some insurance coverage there to help you out. And I think what we're going to see, especially due to the litigation that's already happening in BC, is that there is likely to be some early losses for people challenging these measures, especially the provincial measures. And, you know, that should limit risk for everybody else.
Perfect. And two more points of clarification. And these are a little bit more specific to the Ontario context. One of which, Aaron, is, well, and Roberto, actually, you specifically did bring this up as well. I say Aaron's name because I know she and I have had long discussions about this section, is the exemption for actively participating athletes under 18. And so from my understanding, this exemption only applies for somebody actively participating, so engaged in the game, the workout, you know, in the pool, whatever it may be in the context of that sport, and not, for example, volunteers or parents or spectators or, you know, the little brother that didn't have a babysitter, so he's sitting on the bench. And can you speak to that exemption a little bit? And then as well, that complication of volunteers and coaches and where they fit into the government's passport, COVID passport requirements, and how that may change for different facilities.
So I'll take the first bit and Roberto can correct me or elaborate on it. Essentially, the exemption is only for the athlete that is actively participating in the sport. So under 18, athlete participating. The exemption does not apply for coaches, does not apply for your volunteers. So your coaches and your volunteers of a sport, if it's caught by the Ontario policy, so indoor sports, they're going to need to be vaccinated. Roberto, did I leave anything out there?
No, I think that's right. Yeah, if you're captured the vaccine passport, well, they won't be able to get in the door if they're not vaccinated for an indoor sport the way that the legislation applies now. For the coaches and volunteers. And the only person that can come in is the athlete under 18 in terms of the vaccine passport requirements.
And
so any other questions, Lucienne, or have we reached the end?
I think we've reached the end. Those were all the questions that had come in through the Q&A. And so I think with that, we're able to wrap up. I don't know if Aaron or Roberto, you had any parting thoughts? I think we've covered everything.
I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. And I do apologize, we went a bit long with the questions, but I think that they're questions that everyone has had and ones I've been hearing frequently over the past couple of weeks, and I'm sure we'll continue to hear. If you have any additional questions or if you feel like you need more in-depth advice, feel free to reach out to either Roberto or I. You'll be able to find us on Google. Roberto's at BLG, Borden Ladner Gervais. I'm at Durant Barristers. I'm also recording this session. And if there are people that you think should have been at the session and didn't know about it or didn't have time or there was a conflict, I am making the recording available for a cost for those folks. So feel free to send along my information and I'll find a way to get it to them. And thanks again for participating and best of luck managing all of this with your members. Take care.
Thank you, everyone.